Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Your voice cracked there. Are you a prepubescent pirate?
Shut up. Shut up!
Today is August 23rd, 2015, and this is episode 90, Virtual Buoy.
Wait, episode 90, you read that wrong.
Actually, I read that absolutely correctly. This is episode 90, which does happen to be our 90th episode. We have decided that for episodes 90 to 99, we will be doing episodes 90 to 99.
Don't you mean 90-nin?
So expect a strong Nintendo focus over the next 9 episodes.
Wait, don't you mean a strong Nintendo focus over the last 90 episodes? The last 90 episodes.
Fair. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we are celebrating the 20th birthday of the Virtual Boy, that much-loved and much-hated little device that brought 3D gaming to the masses way earlier than I think most people, you know, really appreciate. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits for your entertainment. Slaggy, would you like to get us started?
Yes, we have official word that it is official that Resident Evil 2 is officially getting an HD remake.
Officially.
Officially.
This is super exciting to me. Obviously, Resident Evil 2 is widely considered not just to be one of the best Resident Evil games, but a lot of people consider it, like, one of their favorite games of all time.
And easily, like, the best survival horror game ever.
Yeah, well, quite a few people feel that way. I don't think it's easily one of the best survival horrors, but I do think it's good. I'm super excited for this. I'll definitely play it. What about you, Slaggy?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Excellent.
And maybe I'll cry a little bit.
We also have word here that people who pre-order Rock Band 4 on the PlayStation 4 through PSN, so, you know, a digital pre-orders only, will be getting 10 additional DLC songs for free when the game releases. These 10 songs are All That Remains, Divide, Blitz Kids, Run for Cover, Bring Me the Horizon, Throne, Dead Sara, Mona Lisa, Duran Duran, The Reflex, Janis Joplin, Move Over.
Jackie Dropsham?
Of Mice and Men, Would You Still Be There? Oh Honey, Sugar You. Pantera, Cowboys from Hell, live from Monsters in Moscow Festival. And C-Stick, Sick, no, oh, that is C-Stick, Steve. I was like, C-Stick? I'm so confused. Is this C-Stick? Anyway, C-Stick Steve, Summertime Boy. I have confirmed independently via Twitter with the official Rock Band Twitter account that these songs will be coming to other platforms for paid download at a later date. So, you know, if you're not buying the game on PlayStation 4, don't trip. These are just songs we're going to have down the line.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, if you're going PlayStation 4, you might want to go digital.
That's true, but, you know, you have to also consider that your back catalog, if you have one, will transfer only from the same family of consoles, so.
Like I said, if you were already planning to go PlayStation, this might be a good incentive to go digital.
That's true. We talked a while back about Rising Thunder, the game that was meant to be accessible for anyone who wanted to learn how to play fighting games. The alpha version is open to anyone. All you have to do is sign up on their website, which you can get a link to from the Silicon Era article over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
This, of course, is a project that Seth Killian is having a big hand in. We also got words from Falcom that The Legend of Heroes Trails in the Sky SC Evolution is on its way. It's going to have completely enhanced HD graphics, fully voiced main events, and a system optimized for the PlayStation Vita, along with remade movie scenes, added event graphics, and a new sound arrangement.
Awesome.
It is coming to Japan this December for Vita.
Awesome. We also have confirmation, courtesy of Hajime Tabata-san over at Square Enix, at Gamescom, that Final Fantasy 15 will be getting a simultaneous worldwide release.
In 2019.
He did not say 2019. That is Slaggy being shady. Actually, they had specifically said that we would be playing the game before 2017.
Oh, wow.
Which a lot of people are taking as, you know,
December 31st, 2016.
Well, as confirmation of a 2016 release window.
I mean, it's been in development for 10 years, so you know.
Yeah, well, you know, fingers crossed that this is the time.
We got some exciting news from the Pokemon World Championships in the form of the maybe not super surprising news But the announcement that Pokken Tournament is getting a worldwide Wii U release in spring 2016.
We also here can happily confirm that the Final Fantasy Portal app has released on the Android and iOS ecosystems in North America. You can play these now for free. It's basically an app that tells you all about the Final Fantasy series. Triple Triad is a free download, which we've discussed here on the show at an earlier episode. And for a limited time, you can get a free download of the first Final Fantasy game via the Portal app. So I've already hopped in. I've played a lot of Triple Triad already. It's a great implementation of the game. Definitely something I highly recommend you check out if you like Triple Triad.
We got some more news about Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball, the third iteration of this. It is going to be released in two versions, Dead or Alive Extreme 3 Fortune for PS4 and Dead or Alive Extreme 3 Venus for the Vita. The game will be running on the Yawaraka engine, which was developed for Dead or Alive 5 to render human skin more realistically. I will leave you to make that conclusion yourself.
No need to be shady. These games currently are scheduled for release in Japan on the PS4 and PS Vita, as Slaggy mentioned, and Tecmo Koei has gone on the record as saying that they are listening to international fans to see if there is demand for these titles in other territories, much as we predicted here on the show. So if you're interested in playing these games, you should probably tweet at Tecmo and let them know.
Indeed.
We also have word that Hearthstone's next expansion, the Grand Tournament, is going to be going live this Tuesday. This Monday. That is August 24th. So, by the time you listen to this episode, it will probably be up already.
Oh, wow.
So please look forward to that.
Final Fantasy VII for iOS is now available.
We also have an announcement here from Arc System Works that the upcoming new version of Guilty Gear Xrd, that is Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator, will have the return of fan favorite playable character Jam Curaldoberry. Please look forward to that. In addition, at the recent Disney D23 Expo, we got huge news on Kingdom Hearts 3, specifically that it's going to have a world based on Big Hero 6.
That's exciting.
The big news about this is that it's going to be a new story that is explored that takes place after the events of the Big Hero 6 movie, including featuring the return of Baymax's old body that he left in that portal.
Spoilers!
Possessed by the darkness. So, the key art for it has Sora on Baymax's back flying around the city with like a giant dark Baymax coming after them with like giant claws and stuff. It's a really cool key visual. I'm super excited. Definitely something I'm super, super, super looking forward to seeing more of. And we also got word that there's going to be a D23 Expo Japan event this November, and there will be a Kingdom Hearts Premium Theater event that's going to have live interviews going on. It's going to have new footage of Kingdom Hearts 3, as well as several announcements being promised.
Oh, wow.
And additionally, the Tokyo Disney Resort Shop is going to have a special edition Play Arts Kai Sora Final Form action figure. So if you're going to be in Japan in November, pick one up for me, please.
I was just going to ask if you're going to have to call in some favors.
All right. And that's about it for our usual slate of follow-ups.
Yep,
our release date. Slaggy, you want to get us going?
Yeah. Unfortunately, Rodea the Sky Soldier has been delayed again, but not too long this time. We're getting the North American release for 3DS and Wii U on November 10th and November 13th in Europe.
Excellent. We also finally have an official date for the release of Yo-Kai Watch in North America. The first Yo-Kai Watch game will be releasing on November 6th.
That's exciting, and I think all the other media is going to be launching right around that time as well.
Indeed. We also have word that Grandia 2 Anniversary Edition is going to be releasing on Steam and Good Old Games tomorrow. That is
Whoa.
August 24th. And for a undisclosed amount of time around its release window, the game will be 25% off its normal asking price of $19.99. This is a great game, and if you want to hop in on it for $15, now would be the time.
Sword Art Online Lost Song is getting a North American release for PS4 and Vita on November 17th.
And last but certainly not least, the indie multiplayer title Runbo for the Wii U, which is currently being sold as like the biggest couch multiplayer game ever, is going to be releasing in North America on August 27th.
Fun.
You should be looking forward to characters from SteamWorld, Shovel Knight.
I was going to say, Shovel Knight's like right in front and center.
Commander Video from the Bit Trip games, the Luchador from Guacamelee. Just a ton of cool crossover indie game characters all like running and like smashing.
Man, looks, they should add some of the ROMs from Read Only Memories.
Oh man, they really should have. That would have been great. Anyway, that's about it for our follow-ups and news bits. So let's get to the news bits.
News. Oh my god, news.
First up here, we have some news that Yo-Kai Watch is getting a game on the Wii U.
Oh wow.
But before you get too excited, this is a collaboration with Ubisoft. It is going to be Yo-Kai Watch Dance. Just Dance special version.
Fun.
Obviously, this game will be a Just Dance game featuring Yo-Kai Watch songs and dance routines from the Yo-Kai Watch series, because you know the Yo-Kai Watch dance and all that is like a whole thing. So
cute.
Yeah. We also have word here that a new Taikyo no Tetsujin game is going to be released for Wii U. This is going to be Taikyo no Tetsujin, The Grand Friends Gathering Strategy.
Aw.
Yeah. So far, we don't have any specific song titles that are going to be in the game. All that has been announced is that many new songs for the series will be introduced in this game.
The actual quote is, it'll have these songs and that songs and many new songs by our standards.
Fun!
I thought that was cute.
We also have word here that personal favorite Azure Striker Gunvolt will be releasing on PC next week. This is going to be going up on Steam on August 28th. Azure Striker Gunvolt, for those of you who might not be aware, was the 2D platformer shooter, like Mega Man style homage by Intic Creates that previously released as an exclusive on the 3DS.
Yep.
If you're into the Mega Man Zero games, I cannot recommend this game highly enough.
Good news for anyone who wanted to pick up a 2DS, it is getting a price drop to $99.99. And it will still...
Are you out of your mind?
I was waiting for you to say that. It will still include the digital version of Mario Kart 7. So, you know, a great time to jump in, especially if you don't ever plan on using the 3D. Or if you have, like, you know, a younger-ish child who, you know, is not... allowed to legally or whatever.
Legally.
Well, I mean, they recommend that, like, if you're like, what, under medically. Seven? If you're under seven or whatever.
Medically, but... not legally.
Yes, but still, it's like, isn't it for, like, kids under seven, like, shouldn't be looking at the 3D or something?
Yeah, it's something, it's possible it could give them a lazy eye because their ocular muscles aren't fully developed or something.
Aw.
We also have word here that Picross 3D is finally getting a sequel. This is going to be Picross 3D 2 for the 3DS, which will be launching in Japan on October 1st.
A bunch of classic arcade hits from Taito are coming to the PS4, including Frontline, Elevator Action, The Legend of Cage.
Kage.
Oh, like Shadow. Kiki Kai Kai, which is not about drag queens, but it really should be. Bubble Bobble, the Ninja Warrior series, and the Darius series.
Daria?
Darius.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Either way, these games are going to be releasing to the PlayStation Network Arcade Archives services.
Arcade Archives.
So please look forward to this and the announcement of further titles in the future. We also have word of the announcement of Summon Night 6 Lost Borders for the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita in Japan. These games typically do make it to North America, albeit with, you know, a pretty big lag time. But, you know, these will be releasing in Japan in spring 2016. Maybe we'll have them by 2018? We also have word that Disney Interactive is bringing a handful of retro Star Wars games to the PlayStation 4. Most impressively of the bunch being Super Star Wars, the side-scrolling Star Wars classic. Other games are going to be Star Wars Racer Revenge, Star Wars Bounty Hunter, and Star Wars Jedi Starfighter. All four will have enhanced graphics and trophies.
Sega announced during the recent ARX Festival 2015 event that Phantasy Star Online 2 is coming to the PS4 sometime in 2016. There will be a playable demo at this year's Tokyo Game Show.
Exciting!
Yes. Hello, we want it over here in America, please. That's never going to happen.
And last, but certainly not least, we have word that this year's PlayStation Experience will be happening on December 5th and December 6th here in sunny San Francisco, California.
Foggy San Francisco, California.
The weather, the way the weather's been lately, no, sunny San Francisco.
In December, we'll see.
Yes, we will. We are currently unsure if we are going to be attending here in studio, but, you know, we're kind of interested, and definitely if any of our listeners are, you know, in town for this event, hit us up, and it would be lovely to meet some of you. But since Gamer X is happening the weekend after this, and this is my birthday weekend we're talking about, I just don't know that we're going to make it to the event itself.
Oh, wait, you mean you don't want to spend your birthday hearing people being like, yeah, Arkham, yeah!
That sounds really grim. Speaking of...
Doom and Gloom.
So, this sucks a lot. We just have one article here, but basically... Grin, who is, of course, the studio behind the Kickstarter sensation Wolf, the Red Hood Diaries, has closed their doors. You know, unfortunately, we don't know a whole lot more than the fact that, you know, the... studio is closed, this game that has been kickstarted is not getting finished, and a whole lot of people are out of work. So
that sucks.
Our hearts and thoughts go out to everyone impacted by this. You know, it really is heartbreaking every time a studio closes, no matter how big, no matter how small. It is always awful, and we really hope that everyone who is affected by this can get new employment quickly.
Indeed.
All right, well, with all that having been said, it's about time to start up this discussion. And, you know, this discussion is about a console that is super near and dear to my heart.
Probably only yours.
Ah, right, but pretty much. No. There are quite a few of us Virtual Boy lovers out there on the internet. I've talked to some other ones. Some of them follow me on Twitter and stuff, which is really cool because, like, oh, hey, guys, you can just listen to my nonsense on Twitter. Thanks. But no, I'm a big fan of the Virtual Boy. I you know, it was a big deal. Part of their promotional blitz when the thing first came out in North America was that you could rent it at Blockbuster for, like, $10. For 3 days, and it came with a $10 coupon to, like, buy the console. So I actually did that, like, 3 times.
Were you able to get 3 coupons?
I mean, I did get 3 coupons, but you could only use one, which...
Aww.
That part sucked, but whatever. I loved the Virtual Boy. I still have many, many, many warm feelings about it. I actually used to, because, you know, I'm super into, like, I was when I was, you know, 12 or 13 years old. I was super into, like, late night TV. And so I cannot even tell you how many evenings I spent as, like, a 12 or 13 year old playing Virtual Boy all night watching, like, Empty Nest and Golden Girls reruns on Lifetime or whatever.
What, you mean, like, listening to them?
Well, yeah, because obviously, you know, the Virtual Boy takes your visual space completely.
So you're playing, like,
mostly Galactic Pinball, which I would play for hours at a time.
So you're playing Galactic Pinball, and it's like, thank you for being a friend.
Exactly.
And it's like, one time in St. Olaf.
My thing with the Virtual Boy is, to me, it just, you know, I appreciate that it wasn't, like, a virtual reality experience. It was really more 3D akin to what you get on the 3DS. But it was at the time, I mean, 20 years ago, it was such a different experience. It was just so, such a cool effect. It was just really neat. The way that, I mean, some games used the 3D was just eye-popping, you know, not literally, obviously, but stuff like in Wario Land, having Wario jump into the background and, like, having that, like, perception of depth that he's actually jumping away from you. It was just, it was really cool. I thought it was an experience unlike anything else that was on the market at the time. And I always felt like the console kind of got sort of treated dirty.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, kind of 2 points related to that, because I did not own a Virtual Boy myself, but, you know, I remember, you know, at that time, it seemed like anything, like, you know, we had Genesis and Super Nintendo, and those both seemed like, oh my god, you know, the graphics are so good, and, you know, we were talking about this kind of a couple weeks ago, just like, you're playing a real-life cartoon, which now sounds silly, but, you know, And then when things like Virtual Boy, it was like, oh, this is the future. So, I mean, I just really remember it being, like, limitless. But then also, you know, this was contemporaneous with, like, the Saturn, right? So, where there was just a lot of tech on the market. This is also contemporaneous with, like, the Jaguar and the 3DO. So, you know, definitely a lot of tech out there that was at first really promising, but, you know, that just maybe the market wasn't right for it. But you're right, the Virtual Boy did get treated dirty, kind of has a unfortunate development history.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the Virtual Boy, and we'll start getting a little more into the facts of it now that we've sort of talked about the perspective we're coming from. The Virtual Boy was officially announced on November 14th of 1994. I very distinctly remember, you know, in the next issue of Nintendo Power after that, just so much coverage of the device. All of the other gaming mags were jumping on it initially. The initial buzz for this thing was actually really quite strong to begin with. You know, Nintendo of America showed the Virtual Boy at the Consumer Electronics Show the following January. Obviously, at the Shoshinkai show that Nintendo used to do, they had it. It was like the focus of their show. The early buzz of the Virtual Boy was actually like very strong. Nintendo at the time had the Research and Development 3 division focused on the Nintendo 64, but the other two engineering units, you know, they were free to experiment and stuff. And Gunpei Yokoi, whom obviously was the inventor of the Game & Watch, of the Game Boy, just a lot of sort of the disruptive tech that Nintendo brought to market, you know, Yokoi's son was behind. And he had actually gotten into this Massachusetts-based company. Their tech, they were Reflection Technology. And they had a tech that was, like, using linear array displays to, like, scan images that all kind of started as a means to, like, basically give Braille readers, like, blind people who were reading, you know, like, more accessible access to scanned, digitized, like, literature. But Yokoi-san saw a way to take this and sort of work with it in a direction that Reflection Technologies was also going, to create almost like a personal theater. And, you know, we all think of Virtual Boy as, like, the fact that it was in 3D, but the primary thing that Yokoi-san was fixated on was more of immersing players in what he would describe as, like, their own private universe.
Mm.
And so the Reflection Technology, they had a tech, it was, like, fax-related. Slaggy, do you recall what that was called?
No, it was, like, the fax...
like Fax View or something.
Fax View, yes.
And which was basically, and I mean, this is actually really cool if you consider it was, you know, 20 years ago. It was like a little box that you could hold in your hand and look into it through a little peep screen.
Basically, like Google Cardboard.
Well, yeah, right? And it would, you know, display faxes that you were getting in real time, which, you know, obviously at the time was like, what? You know, they
used
to...
Yeah, now it's like LOL faxes.
Now LOL faxes, yeah, right? It's like, yeah, can you PDF me that document, Jones? Email that to me? Thanks. You know, the LED technology that was used in the device was the red LEDs. This is something that the Virtual Boy gets nowadays burned for quite a bit. But apparently, you know, there were two reasons why they really went for this. First of all, of course, was that red LEDs were the cheapest of all LEDs to use. And second, it was supposedly, at least, the red LEDs provided, like, the most stable image in the darkness. Like, you got high contrast with the darkness that was just generated by having no light in the LEDs when they were, like, turned off or whatever. And so you ended up with, like, the perception of a sharper image with, like, less, like, interference, and the images were less, quote-unquote, jumpy that way. So, you know, obviously this was done in part as a cost-saving measure, but also in typical Nintendo fashion, they felt that the presentation was enhanced by the shades of red factor.
And I mean, when that was kind of Nintendo's color, was, you know, this both the at least in America, you know, the NES and...
Hey, also in Japan, you know, the Famicom was red.
Super Famicom was a little more colorful with its, like, colorful buttons, but...
Yeah, but the original Famicom was what, like, SNES. Tan and red?
Yeah, so, I mean, like, and the Nintendo logo was red, so, you know. I mean, that maybe that's just was my, like, 10, 11-year-old perspective, like, oh, it's Nintendo red, oh.
Ah!
I'm like, it's Nintendo red!
But, you know, the device using these LED screens and I say screens, but really it's a very cool arrangement of like mirrors that are actually reflecting these LEDs at your eyes, which the tech is amazing. I still think the tech is really cool. Like reading about it, we're going to link you to an article in place of our usual Smash section. You can find the link over at GameBuoy.org. Which explains the tech behind the screens a little bit better, but it's really cool stuff. Explaining it is a little bit above me, but... You know, the TLDR on the three-dimensional effect is that it's basically the same concept as, like, those old ViewMaster 3D slides.
Love ViewMasters.
Using slightly different images on each eye to, you know, make that pop-out effect happen. Anyway, you know, the Virtual Boy, you know, it kept getting shown promotionally. You know, they had demos running of, like, a Star Fox-style game at the time, which itself did not get released, actually, despite the fact that many of the sort of features of that prototype were ultimately incorporated into Star Fox 2.
Which also never came to be.
You know, so the Virtual Boy, following its initial announcement up until its release in 1995, actually had good buzz going. Nintendo started, you know, putting a lot of money into advertisement. It's funny because when you look at it in the modern age, you look at these advertisements and, like, it is genuinely awful. These advertisements. It's just really terrible stuff. But, you know, they partnered with Blockbuster Video. They partnered with NBC. There were, like, some really awful, awful, awful print advertisements. You can find scans of them all over the place on the internet. And, you know, actually, the fact that the Blockbuster did their rental promotion, which we talked about, was actually apparently viewed after the fact as a negative. Apparently, a lot of feedback Nintendo got was that people who had wanted to buy the device actually got turned off on it by renting it.
Oh.
And that is sort of the story of the Virtual Boy, sort of in microcosm. Basically, everyone was really excited until it didn't meet their lofty expectations. Like, if I had to, in one word, sum up what happened to the Virtual Boy, I would say that people overexpected and Nintendo underdelivered. You know, there was a lot of discussion internally that, you know, they wanted to do more Mario games. They wanted to sort of use, like, three-dimensional ideas to experiment with Nintendo's key franchises, and you know, like Miyamoto-san specifically told like Yokoi-san, like, you already have Mario and Mario Tennis, do not make other Mario games, which as I understand it is largely how the Virtual Boy Wario Land got made. Was basically they needed a 2D mascot platformer and couldn't use Mario. The funny thing, of course, is that Wario game is largely responsible for the Wario Land games that we were getting for a long time, you know, up to and including, what was it, Wario Land Shake It?
Yeah, for the Wii.
For the Wii, yeah. You know, just really inventive, super cute sprite work, like almost a little bit more like puzzle solving experience rather than a straight up 2D platformer. You know, those are things that started in the Virtual Boy Wario Land. You know, there was the Game Boy Wario Land game. Was that Mario Land 3 Wario Land?
Yep.
But that's a little bit more of the traditional 2D platformer, in my opinion.
Right.
And the later Wario Lands really focused on more of, like, the puzzle-solving aspects of, you know, what we've now come to accept as the Wario Land games. Like, the Game Boy Advance Wario Land game, was that Wario Land 4? A lot of people view that as, like, one of the best-designed, like, challenge puzzle games they've ever played, and I actually would include myself in that. That it is such a perfectly designed game. You can go online, you can literally read, like, 50-page essays on why that game is underappreciated for its amazing level design, and I agree completely. Started on the Virtual Boy. The Virtual Boy released in Japan on July 21st, 1995. Man, my brain really wanted to call that 2095. Brains are funny.
Yeah, we're not at 2095 yet. Welcome to Game Boy.
In North America, released on August 21st, 1995, which obviously is why we're talking about it here. My little boy is 20 years old. The launch titles in North America were Mario Tennis, Red Alarm, Telero Boxer, which I've always called Telero Boxer. Like, the idea of Telero rather than Telero is really fucking up my mojo right now. And Galactic Pinball.
You just called the Virtual Boy your little boy.
I love the Virtual Boy. Shut up. I love it. I don't think it's news to anyone listening to this.
Were you cuddling it in bed last night?
Definitely not. My boyfriend was here. Jesus. I don't think he's willing to share. So the Virtual Boy was not released in PAL markets. In North America, Nintendo Mario's Tennis with every Virtual Boy sold as a pack-in game. Initially, their projections were to sell about 3 million consoles and 4 million software units. I'm sorry, 14 million wow. software units, which, holy moly. Unfortunately, you know, the device reached stores with a retail price of nearly $200.
Yep. Was it $179.95?
Which, you know, actually means that it came out later than other 32-bit consoles, including, again, like you said, the 3DO, the Saturn, and even the PlayStation, at only a slightly lower price.
Yep.
You know, so Nintendo of America immediately started revising their expectations. You know, they immediately cut their expected hardware sales to 1.5 million and software at just 2.5 million, which obviously is a huge, huge drop. And then, you know, after 3.5 months, so the end of its first year of release, because that would be December, they had only shipped 350,000 units. So the Virtual Boy, after that point, already, the gears were set into motion to take this thing off the market. Sales were considered super disappointing. And its last official release was 3D Tetris, which came out on March 22nd, 1996. Nintendo did announce additional titles for release at E3 that year, but not a single one of them was released. The console itself was actually discontinued in Japan even before that. It was actually discontinued in Japan in 1995 toward the end of the year.
After that disappointing sales numbers came in?
Exactly. And, you know, by first quarter 1996 in North America, internally they had already agreed to pull the plug on the device.
So what happened?
Nintendo never, you know, put out an official press release or anything. Just they just quietly stopped supporting it. So what were you saying?
What happened?
Well, you know, that's something that has been talked about many, many times over the years. And the TLDR, you know, is basically, you know, initially the Virtual Boy was supposed to be like a head-mounted display. It was supposed to strap on and like not mess with like the whole like, oh, it's a headset that's on a tripod at all times, which technically is a bipod because they it actually only has two legs. It doesn't have three legs, but whatever. Y'all know what I mean.
Rob has no legs.
Okay.
Robotic operating buddy. I'm looking at him right now.
Okay, so, you know, basically, the game, or the console, the hardware, they used less expensive chips that were less powerful because they were lighter. They were really trying to make it a light device so that it could be head-mounted. Then after that, they realized, like, oh, hey, the chips we're using are actually interfering with the lasers and the mirror system that this head device uses. So they end up having to encase everything in metal inside the head unit, which made it too heavy to be a head-mounted display. They had to put it on the pedestal, tripod, bipod, whatever it is. But they still used the super light hardware. So, you know, they found that, you know, some of the initial goals for the thing were basically to have it be running like Nintendo 64 level games in this head-mounted 3D display. And, you know, to this day, a lot of people feel like if the console had gone in that direction, maybe it would have been bigger. Maybe, you know, part of the problem is, and we'll talk about literally every game that ever released for the thing, because there was only like 17, but none of them are really big, like, tech pushers. They're mostly, like, Game Boy level games with some prettier graphics. Obviously, that isn't a bad thing when you look at some of the incredible games that came out toward the end of the Game Boy's lifespan. You look at, like, Telero Boxer has really charming graphics. Wario Land Virtual Boy obviously has, you know, really cute, charming graphics with a lot of character, really great level design. So, you know, I mean, the games were good, but for whatever reason, people just weren't wowed. The console never caught on.
And then, you know, all the warnings.
Oh, well, that was another big thing.
Speaking of lazy eyes and optic nerves.
Yeah, why don't you talk about that a little bit, Slaggy? I know you've read up on this.
Well, I mean, like, because they had went to consult doctors to see if it was medically sound, not legally sound, like I was talking about with the 3DS. And from what I understand, like, research actually showed that the opposite of being harmful to optic nerves, that actually it could have, like, strengthened children's optic nerves and stuff. But
well, not children's. Not children's.
Oh, not the serotonin?
Well, the thing is that, so they didn't find that it was really particularly damaging, but there was some suggestion that it could strengthen the muscles of in your eyes, like your optic muscles or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some discussion that it could actually have beneficial health effects.
But it had all these warnings on the box. The games had warnings on the boxes.
Oh, and this came out in a time where there was a lot of change in liability law in Japan, which, funny enough, that connects to my day job because I work in that kind of law. But, you know, there was a lot of change in, like, failure to warn protocol in Japan. And so basically people were warning about every manner of nonsense on their products. You may recall after a certain time in the 90s where your game carts would suddenly have warnings in the instruction manual of, like, do not operate while standing in the bathtub holding a cat and a blow dryer. And that's because basically any foreseeable circumstance where your device could be used, if there was any danger in any use of it in that situation, you had to warn.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Nintendo erred on the side of caution, erred that, you know, showed that, you know, it's potentially possible that kids' eyesight could be damaged, or not even their eyesight, but that they could develop a lazy eye. And, you know, I think that little red warning box on the hardware, or on the box that the hardware came in, I really think that turned a lot of people off, too.
Yeah, I mean, I know that just a lot of people, and I believe a lot of the press, too, latched onto that and said, oh, you know, it could be damaging. And I'm trying to think.
Well, and you still see people talking about, like, oh, Virtual Boy is great if you ignore the headaches that it causes inherently.
Right, and I'm trying to think at the time, I would have to go and ask her, but I know my mom wouldn't let me get one. I think it was just because it was too expensive, and, like, I, you know, so much tech was coming out at that time. The Sega CD had only come out, you know, just a couple years prior, and so she didn't understand why I needed every console or whatever, so, you know.
If she could see you now.
Right, but, you know, it also might have been some of the elements of, you know, oh, is it damaging to the eyesight? And, you know, when you think of kind of like that era of the 90s, this is the time where, you know, oh, don't eat candy that's been homemade because it might have razor blades when you're trick-or-treating. Oh, they might put sheets of acid on your Dippin' Dots or whatever.
And temporary tattoos.
And your temporary tattoos, so only eat candy that's been wrapped.
Right? Like,
so there's,
dude,
just a lot of, like,
who's,
you know,
going to waste perfectly good acid on temporary tattoos they're giving away to kids.
But, you know, when you think about it, just kind of like that pre-internet explosion, urban legend sort of culture that existed when it came to things like this, you know, that definitely didn't help to disseminate, you know, a lot of the myths and misconceptions about the Virtual Boy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I really strongly agree there. I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, we see it more today where these misconceptions about the device that we now factually know to be untrue, like, they still persist. So it's really just sad to me because, again, you know, I feel like the Virtual Boy is a fantastic platform. I think it has a handful of really good games that really could have grown into an amazing library if it was given more than, what, 6 months on the market? It's just very sad. Very sad. Slaggy, do you have anything else you want to say about the Virtual Boy before we break down specifically talking about the games?
No, you know, just that it was unfortunate. And, you know, that it was a little more time in the oven, I think, could have become a real game changer. But like I said, this was just, there was so much tech. I remember, like, around that era, when you'd read the JCPenney Christmas catalog, there'd be, like, all of these, like, random video game things trying to compete for, you know, a share of the market slice. So it was, like, a really kind of weird time market-wise until it really, you know, we think of it as, you know, the big three these days, but back then there was still a lot of, you know, hardware competition after, you know, it was kind of like the second wave of, you know, all of this tech being around, so.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I want to talk real quick. We're probably going to say a little bit about each game that was released for the Virtual Boy. But some of them we're not really going to have a lot to say about, because some of these games I have never played because they're so rare that you're looking at literally some of these games go on eBay even still for $700 or $800 a piece.
And some were not released in...
And some were not released, although, you know, I have imported Virtual Boy games and they've played perfectly fine. So, I mean, you know, if you're interested in a Virtual Boy game that never released in your region, feel free to import. The first game I want to talk about is 3D Tetris. It was the last game released for the Virtual Boy. It was released in North America only, and it is, you know, not that awesome, I have to say.
Well, I know the Japanese title, even though it didn't get a Japanese release, is Perigo Brock. So is it even Tetris-y?
Well, yeah, so the game is Tetris-y. Like, it's inherently, it uses the Tetrominoes? Okay, yeah, those.
Because, you know, I'm just thinking this is the era where, like, Tetris Attack, which, you know, amazing game, but was not technically Tetris.
Yeah, no, this game is a lot more Tetris.
Okay, because that was something I was never quite clear about. Thank you.
It's just, unfortunately, it's three-dimensional, like, completely three-dimensional, and in a way that I don't really think works super well for Tetris. You have falling blocks, but you have to fit them, you know, in a 3D space. And it sounds really cool, but, you know, we hadn't had, 3D cameras, like, fixed the way that they are, you know, the way that they were in the next console generation by Nintendo. Like, it's a mess. It's confusing to play. And if I'm being honest, I didn't think it was very fun. And in fact, you know, usually when you have a game that's, like, the last released game on the market, finding used copies is super difficult. They're super expensive. That is not the case with 3D Tetris. I price checked this today, and you can get copies for like $22 online.
Ouch.
So, for being like the last game on a console, that is ridiculous. And I do want to say I thought it was a bad game, but it was really cool. I mean, the 3D effect worked really well. The tower had like a real sense of depth as a result. It's just not a fun game to play. What was a fun game to play, though, was Panic Bomber. And Panic Bomber was really cool in that it basically plays similar to, like, you know, it's a falling block puzzle game set in the Bomberman franchise. Its closest cousin is probably like a Puyo Puyo style game.
Oh.
So yeah, the Virtual Boy version, it just was basically the, like, Neo Geo and PC Engine game, but with 3D effects added. But the gameplay was still fundamentally just a 2D falling block game. And it was really fun. Playing it on Virtual Fighter didn't... Or Virtual Fighter. Playing it on Virtual Boy didn't add a lot to it. If you're looking to play it in the modern age, you're probably better off playing it on PC Engine, Neo Geo, or even PSP.
Oh.
But because the Neo Geo version, I think it was, got a PSP port. But I, you know, it's all right. It's a fun game, just not something that you'd want to play on Virtual Boy, which I wish I would have known before I bought a copy of it a year or two ago.
Oops.
Oops, poops. But from there, we get to a game I'm actually really passionate about. This is Galactic Pinball. This is a pinball game made by Intelligent Systems.
Oh.
Right? It had several boards set in the Milky Way galaxy. Basically, the galactic part of it is that you're basically playing pinball on pinball boards that are floating through space. The 3D effects, though, were fantastic. Basically, it really created the sense that, like, the end of the board that was further away from you, it really looks, like, further away from you. Like, it looks like you're playing pinball down a tunnel.
Oh, wow.
It's a really cool effect. Like I said, you know, there was one board that had a Metroid Easter egg where Samus's ship would come out and, like, you could interact with Samus for a second.
Right, because Intelligent had a hand in the original Metroid, didn't they?
That is my understanding. So it's, you know, it's just a really cool game. I used to play it, my mom would play it, and we'd, like, take turns, like, while watching, like, Golden Girls and Empty Nest. Like, we would straight up play Galactic Pinball for hours, just because
That's awesome.
It's such a good pinball game. The physics are really quite fantastic. To me, it's still probably my favorite pinball game, other than, like, Zen Pinball on the PS3, which has, like, true-to-life physics. But for video game pinball, for me, it's probably Galactic Pinball that I always come back to. Even still, this is the cartridge that is in my Virtual Boy right now.
That's awesome.
The next game I want to talk about is Golf. This one was developed by T&E Software, whom also developed 3D Tetris. Golf fared a little better, but I actually, I wasn't super into it. Like, it was good, but it was really basic. It was like a really basic golf game. It was just one of those things where, like, this would have been better on a different console. Like, the graphics were neat in that they used the 3D effects so that it was like, oh wow, this looks like you're really in a golf course, except everything is tinted red. But the gameplay was really basic, and it didn't have a lot to it. So it's all right if you're looking for a copy, you're trying to get into the Virtual Boy fandom. You could do worse than Golf, but you could do better too. We next come up on Innsmouth no Yakata, which was apparently a 3D first-person shooter for Virtual Boy. I have never played it, but in researching this episode, I read about it, and, you know, it apparently has a branching level structure and is based on, like, Cthulhu lore.
Yeah, it's based on an H.P. Lovecraft story, I believe.
So I'm definitely going to be looking into this. Like, I might have to buy a copy of this if I can find it, because that sounds neat. We then come to my secret favorite Virtual Boy game, and one that I think about nearly every day. This is Jack Brothers.
I think about Jack Bros every day, too.
Ah, you nasty bitch. The thing about Jack Brothers, first off, is that it released in North America, and it was kind of like the first Mega 10 game that came out here officially. I got it, or I didn't get it, unfortunately. That's why I think about it a lot. I rented it because I was familiar with the Jack Frost that was on the cover, and I had always kind of wondered, like, what Jack Frost was all about, because, you know, I was following all kinds of video game publications back then, and I wanted to know what this was about, so I rented it. And, I really enjoyed it. The game was super hard. It almost had, like, roguelike elements, which I thought was really cool. It's like a labyrinth game, and you have, like, a time limit, and, you know, there are enemies, and you have to basically get through the labyrinth. They used the 3D so that you could, like, see additional floors below you, like in the background, and using parallax scrolling, it created a really great illusion of depth where it felt like, oh wow, that floor is like really far down. When you would get hit by enemies, you would lose time. It was a really hard game, but I found it really fun in a big way. It was the first time I really got into this style of, like, 2D dungeon crawl roguelike style gameplay. In a big way for me, this was where it was at.
And now,
and my personal problem is that this game was made in super low quantities. Now, when you try to buy a used copy, it's again $800 or $900.
Oh wow!
With no box or anything, I fucking passed up buying this for $13 at my local Blockbuster when they were phasing out their Virtual Boy shit. I passed on it for some fucking shitty Arrow the Acrobat SNES game.
Ew.
Yeah, this is something that will probably haunt me for forever. Which, you know, privilege of my life, I'm haunted by not buying a game I loved and will never get to play again. But man, this is such a cool game. I would highly recommend it to you if you ever get the chance to play it. But unfortunately, I don't know that that is going to happen.
And now, did you control Jack Frost, Jack Lantern, and Jack Skeleton all at the same time?
As I recall, you could pick. My recollection, and again, you know, I haven't seen this game in 20 years. It might not even be as good as I remember. I have not played it in 20 years. But I seem to remember that you could pick which one you were playing.
Oh, okay. And for those who are like, what are we talking about? Jack Frost, Jack Lantern, and Jack Skeleton, of course, all being demons from the Mega 10 series, and, you know, also the Persona games. You can get them as Persona cards.
The next game I want to talk about here is Mario Clash. This was obviously an R&D1 produced game, and it was basically a 3D reimagining of Mario Bros. That is, of course, not Super Mario Bros., but you know, the original, the 2D game where it's like a single screen game that you have to, like, knock enemies from under their platform and then bop them on top. Mario Bros., yeah. But it's really cool because basically what they did was they added a second screen in the background, and the two playfields interact with each other. Like, you could get Koopa Troopa shells and, like, throw it into the other stage. If you're in the other stage, you could throw it into the foreground stage, and it added, like, a whole layer of, like, strategy to what you were doing. This was, I think, for a lot of people, like, there was almost like a 50-50 split on like half of the people who played it were like, this is amazing and totally justifies the Virtual Boy. And the other half were like, this is super derivative and shows why this console shouldn't exist.
Where did you stand?
I thought it was amazing. You might even be able to tell just by how I've already spoken of it here.
Yeah, I've only seen it in, like, you know, screenshots, but I mean, for the time, it looked really impressive.
To this day, I can't really play Mario Bros. Because Mario Clash is so much better.
Well, sorry, next time we play Mario 3, I'm gonna go on your spot and make you play Mario Bros. Because that's
and
just what you do.
That will not go super well for you, because I'll be pretty mad about it.
And then you'll steal all of my cards and get, like, 1-ups.
Yes, that is what will happen. You know, next up, obviously, is Mario Tennis. Kind of does what it says on the tin. It is a 3D tennis game. To me, the closest gameplay experience to this is probably like Wii Sports Tennis. It was a very similar, like, you know, you are in your little space and all you're really super, super focused on is your swing motion, which in this case was triggered by a button press, not by, you know, motion controls. But, you know, a lot of people connect it to the other Mario Tennis games because, as I understand, this is the first of the Mario Tennis series. But the gameplay is very basic in Mario's Tennis for Virtual Boy. You know, obviously Mario Tennis for Nintendo 64 and Game Boy Color, you know, they're well-loved for being games that are, like, deep experiences. I think Mario Tennis for Game Boy Color, in fact, is even like a tennis RPG, practically.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, that is not the case for Virtual Boy Mario Tennis. It's very basic. You have, you know, limited input options, but it was a good experience. The core mechanics were already in place, and I think it's great as a pack-in game, especially. Really dig it. The next one, obviously, is Nestor's Funky Bowling.
You love bowling, so were you a fan of Nestor's Funky Bowling?
Well, this was developed by Sapphire Corporation in association with Nintendo IRD. Is this the, like, gameplay debut of the Nintendo Power comic character Nestor?
Yes.
Like, that's amazing to me. I did like Nestor's Funky Bowling. I didn't find it as funky as
maybe you should
play
as Hester then.
But, you know, it's a very basic bowling game. And this means that if you like bowling a lot, you're probably going to be into it. If you don't care for bowling, it is not going to wow you. I love bowling, so I was into it. I thought the 3D effect was really cool in that, like, you throw the ball and, you know, the perception of depth makes it appear that the ball really is traveling down the lane away from you. You know, it was I enjoyed it. It was cool. But, again, it is kind of basic, and so, you know, if you're looking for, like, a real great bowling experience, it's not something you should hunt down. Although if you want to, surprisingly, it was, you know, the second to last cartridge made for the game, for the damn device. And yet you can find copies of it for under $30.
Aw.
Yeah. Next up, though, is a game that I actually, to this day, think is quite fantastic. This is Red Alarm. And a lot of people think of Red Alarm as the best Virtual Boy game. This was made by TNE Soft, and it is basically a Star Fox game.
Yeah, that was my understanding.
It is a Star Fox game, basically, with, you know, the 3D effects. All of the art is, like, vector art, which is off-putting at first, but once you play it, it actually clicks. Like, you look at, like, images of the game, and it's like, this is a mess, this is hella ugly, like, this is awful. When you play it, it actually looks fantastic. Like, the visual aesthetic works really well. The 3D, it really, like, feels three-dimensional. It feels like there's a lot of depth. And to me, it's just a lot of fun. I think it's a really great, you know, space shooter game. And fortunately, if you're getting into Virtual Boy, and this is probably one of the, like, two or three games I would recommend as, like, a must-have, you can find used copies of this for under $30.
Oh, nice.
Next up, we have one I have never played because it is super uncommon. That is SD Gundam Dimension War. My understanding is that it is a 3D SD Gundam strategy game, but I have never played it. It's one of the rarest Virtual Boy games. It's up there with the North American release of Jack Bros. This is one that if you can find a copy of it on like eBay or something for under $800, it's like, oh man, that's a steal.
Wow.
This was the last Virtual Boy game released in Japan. So, you know, this really fits with what you typically see of last released games that aren't completely awful. There was also Space Invaders Virtual Collection. This was, again, one of the rarest games released for the console. Has 2D and 3D versions of Space Invaders and Space Invaders 2. I have never played it. Again, one of the rarest games for Virtual Boy. Expect to pay more than $500 if you need a copy. I do not recommend it. But that brings us to Tolero Boxer. And the cool thing about that is that, again, you know, there are a lot of copies of Tolero Boxer out there. And it's, again, one of the must-play games if you're getting into Virtual Boy. Tolero Boxer's secret is that it's Punch-Out. You know, between Punch-Out and Super Punch-Out, the Punch-Out series didn't get a lot of love otherwise. There are like three Punch-Out games: Punch-Out, Super Punch-Out, and Punch-Out Wii. Many of us, however, would include Tolero Boxer with that. It was developed by Nintendo R&D1, and its controls are literally Punch-Out controls. So, you know, you have your left punch and your right punch and your uppercuts and your blocks and your dodges, and it is exactly Punch-Out. The game at the time, I remember all of the magazines at the time called it out for being like way too hard. But for me, I never really felt that way because I played so much Punch-Out. And this, again, it is literally Punch-Out. It's just another set of Punch-Out bosses. If you like Punch-Out, you have to play Tolero Boxer. Just, you have to. It is basically the lost Punch-Out game.
With robots,
yeah.
And don't forget the robot.
Again, not super hard to find copies of, fortunately, and pretty cool. There was also the Japanese-only release of V-Tetris. I, unfortunately, have never played that. I can't really comment on it. But we also had Vertical Force, which is a Hudson Soft game, which, you know, very cool. As you might have guessed by its name, it is a vertical scrolling shooter, typically what we refer to as a shoot-em-up. Or a shmup.
Shmup.
If you like Hudson's mid-90s shmup game, this is for you. It is effectively, in that case, just a lost shmup. I already have a copy of it for this episode. I did run a price check. It looks like you can find copies for between $15 and $25.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Getting it, the cool thing about the Virtual Boy is if you're just looking for, like, neat experiences, there are some really cool experiences you can have for not a lot of money. Obviously, stuff like Jack Bros, SD Gundam, Space Invaders, you know, these things are going to be unattainable, unfortunately. But, you know, the must-haves, the great experiences, the Red Alarms, Tolero Boxers, Vertical Forces, and Wario Lands, like, these you can find. You could get all of those games probably for under $100 combined.
Wow.
And that is a hell of a lot of great gaming for that amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not trying to be a completionist and you just want a nice little library to boost your collection of retro games.
Yeah, there are three more I'm going to talk about here. I'm going to go slightly out of order. I've been going in alpha order, but I want to talk first about Virtual League Baseball. It was a fairly entry-level baseball game, but I wouldn't really recommend that you super play it. The 3D effects and the visuals were a lot of fun, but the game was really hard to play. Like, it's funny, in early demos, apparently the coding was, like, so broken that it was literally impossible to play. I guess, in theory, they fixed it, but, like, I have a cartridge of this game, and I would still describe it as pretty much impossible to play. But it's pretty. There was also a Water World game. This is considered to be the worst of the Virtual Boy games.
Oh, so it's the Waterworld the movie of Virtual Boy games.
Except the Waterworld movie is so bad that it's hilarious, and the game is just bad.
Did they get Kevin Costner to do any cross-promotion?
No.
Do you play as a virtual Kevin Costner, though?
I guess in theory you do. I don't recall him being on screen. I could load the game up, but I think I'd prefer not to. But what I do recall is that the game actually played very similar to, like, the tank modes of Star Fox 64, except you're on a watercraft. I will say the water effects in the game were really cool. It used, multiple layers of parallax scrolling on different, depth layers to create the effect of, like, water. And that part was cool. It's just, as a game, it was not fun at all. Like, at all. You had to constantly be pressing all kinds of crazy buttons to do basic actions that should just be, like, mapped to, like, a single button input, but instead you're having to, like, press, like, one shoulder button, one face button, and one direction button. It was just too much.
Nope.
Yeah. But this does bring us to the end of our journey with Virtual Boy Wario Land, which to me is the number one best Virtual Boy game. I still, when I pull my Virtual Boy out, it is for this or Galactic Pinball. I still play these games, not super, super often, but
Captain Spike, once take every off 2 years Virtual or so, Boy right now.
All right.
Just kidding.
And, you know, a lot of people over the years have even said, you know, they feel that Virtual Boy games, the good ones, get too much love, disproportionate love, because there are so few games on the console that the gems really stand out. But everyone I've ever talked to who has played Wario Land agrees that this is a legitimately great platformer that brings new ideas to the table and took, you know, the 2D Mario platforming games in a new direction that long term did impact sort of the goals and design of 2D Mario. So I mean, I can't think of a better legacy than that, frankly. So I just, it's a fantastic game. You can still find copies for under $30. And if you have even the slightest interest in Virtual Boy, slightest interest, I beseech you, I beg you, jump on Wario Land. I do not believe you will regret it. Slaggy, do you have anything else to say about any of these Virtual Boy games?
No, you know, just that I'm glad that there were a couple of good little gems in there. And, you know, like you said, that at least with the case of Wario Land, that it had a lasting impact. It's just, it's a sad little story for the Virtual Boy.
Yeah, it really is. That having been said, Slaggy, what are the chances that you're going to someday look into Virtual Boys?
Oh, I might. I mean, maybe I'll just rent one from you for $10.
Well, I'm not giving you a coupon. No, I know. I'll give you a $10 off coupon at Taco Bell.
Deal. We did over on our social links have some people talking about Virtual Boy, but
yes.
Would you like to finish up with a little love note? Or I guess this whole episode really has been your love note, hasn't it?
Yeah, honestly, we're doing this episode because I have always wanted to talk about how much I love the Virtual Boy. And, you know, with the anniversary of the release being this past week, this was my excuse. Thank you all for letting me talk about something I really passionately love. And hopefully, you know, I've gotten one or two of you interested too.
Yeah. Did you pull it out on Friday, the actual day?
I did, actually. In fact, I can show it to you right now. It's in my closet, like, literally still, like, with all the cords and stuff plugged in.
Aww.
Anyway, why don't you get to those social links?
All right. We asked, this week we're celebrating the Virtual Boy's 20th birthday. Ever play one? Got a favorite game? Over on Twitters, our first tweet came from Dark Sakura over from the Orange Lounge Radio podcast, the longest running video game podcast of all time, saying, I have one too, but I can't pick a favorite game since they all give me migraines, which is not, in this case, like, you know, headaches. Like, it's a legitimate excuse, so.
Yeah, of course.
And, which is, you know, unfortunate.
Some people definitely have issues with that with any handheld device, any LCD, LED device.
Yeah, and I know
some people just don't like the all red stuff, and it, you know, it does hurt their eyes, and you know, that is what it is.
Yeah, and I know specifically, like, Dark Sakura and I have talked about the 3DS 3D and how we play with that off. So the Book Pirate says, yes, I owned one. Mario Tennis, which came with it, was good, but the Wario game was awesome. It's in need of a 3DS release.
I 100% agree with that. I have said here on the show before, like, it is stupid to me that we have never seen Virtual Console 3DS games. Like, it's the perfect opportunity to bring these games back out and get them the love that they truly deserve.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how. I mean, I know that Virtual Boy can be emulated, but you know how Nintendo is with Virtual Console.
Yeah.
Shane Alenko says, I actually own one and think it gets kind of a bum rap. My favorite game on there is Tolero Boxer or Mario Tennis.
Yes, bitch! Except I would never call you bitch, Shane. I know you're not that kind of person.
Yeah, we don't like that word, but yeah. Your Enzyme says, I never owned one, but had a friend who did. I actually like Wario Land and Mario Tennis. It's too bad they were VB games. And also saying, LOL, y'all may be the first people to ever celebrate anything about the VB. Aww.
No, you know, there are a lot of Virtual Boy lovers out there.
Yeah, it's nice that it has a small but dedicated fan base. And then when you probably, I bet when you find one, you're like, oh, you're one of them too?
Yeah, that, I mean, that has actually literally been my experience.
All right, and over on the Book of Faces, which sounds like it's a Silent Hill title, over on Facebook, we asked the same question, adding the bonus question over on Facebook. With VR technology being a big focus for the future of gaming, do you think it's time the Virtual Boy got a successor? And our dear friend Amanda commented, you might remember her from the Party Games Games Party episode.
Party Games Games Party, woo! Spring break!
And she has said, in a way, I think the 3DS was a successor. The Virtual Boy was novel for its time, but let's be real, the graphics were pretty janky and there were a lot of limitations with the 3D technology. The Oculus Rift seems like it's today's version with more variety in the newest games and the ability for many developers to use the hardware. I'd love to see Nintendo make a version, but Nintendo really needs to step up their game instead of just relying on in-house IP. So interesting, kind of touching on a couple of different things there. So thank you for that insight, Amanda.
I had never considered that, you know, well, I mean, I may have, but I had forgotten. There are Virtual Boy emulators for Oculus Rift.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I have an Oculus Rift. I tonight might play with this. And maybe I'll get to play Jack Brothers again.
And if not, you can always play Jack Brothers.
Girl.
So with that, before we move on, you had said that you wanted to share an article. Do you want to discuss that very quickly?
This article can be found over on fastcompany.com.
Fastcompany.com.
But of course, we will be linking you over at GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
And this article is called Unraveling the Enigma of Nintendo's Virtual Boy 20 Years Later. This article, you know, was really great, actually, to confirm a lot of stuff I had read over the years. And something I really liked was that they also included excerpts of the autobiography of Gunpei Yokoi-san. You know, there's a very common misconception that Yokoi-san was banished from Nintendo due to the poor performance of the Virtual Boy, but I had never actually heard that from any official site, just from the fact that, you know, a lot of American commentators were saying that in the 90s, including, you know, Howard Lincoln, who was the head of Nintendo of America, had even said something along those lines once. But I had never found anything really confirming it. And it was fantastic that, you know, reading this article with the translated excerpts from his autobiography, where he talks about how he had actually planned on retiring from Nintendo several years earlier than he ended up retiring. And that, you know, basically Virtual Boy was something that caught his eye when he saw this Massachusetts-based you know, tech firm. When he saw their tech, his mind went wild with imagining how it could be used in games, and, you know, it actually kept him convinced to stay in the market a little while.
Yeah, he helped make the WonderSwan.
Well, yeah. And, you know, he stayed with Nintendo for a while, including doing, you know, the Game Boy Pocket revision of the Game Boy
series,
revitalizing sales in a huge way. I mean, it's silly, really, if you stop and think about it, to think that he was banished from Nintendo. Like, okay, the Virtual Boy did bad, but they more than made up for it with how well his efforts on the Game Boy Pocket did. I mean, that, along with the release of Pokemon, really, Game Boy ended up being super viable for more than a decade because of these things. So, Yokoi-san, not driven out of Nintendo, despite what the common belief is. And this article for me was really great, because I had always been sort of thinking, like, this common knowledge doesn't make sense to me. And, like, finally to have, like, a source that was like, oh yeah, this is a source, this is where the information comes from, you can verify it. That did not happen. Fantastic read. I absolutely think you should. This is worth reading for any Nintendo fan, regardless of how they think of the Virtual Boy.
Indeed.
So with all that having been said, I think it might be time to move on to what we've been playing recently.
I said, hey, what's going on?
So this week, I have been playing Final Fantasy XIV, although, you know, not a whole lot, because I've been taking a little bit of a break, you know, just because a large part, I wanted to let Slagkick catch up with me and a couple other people. And, you know, I was playing Final Fantasy XIV literally every day after work. I would just come home, and do nothing but play Final 14.
And then be like, oops, I forgot to eat dinner.
I would literally be like, oh yeah, I forgot to eat. I guess my next meal will be tomorrow when I get to work.
Which makes me worry. I don't want you to be one of those, horror stories where someone starves to death from playing StarCraft.
Bitch, look at me. I could stand to lose like 80 pounds, all right? So, what I have been playing, though, since then is Terraria, which recently got a new content patch. They added a lot of new stuff to the game, which is very cool. It's a very different experience from the last time I played it, and I'm really enjoying that.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear.
I've also been playing a lot of Triple Triad
via
the Final Fantasy Portal app, and I also started a new game of Final Fantasy 13.
Oh, very nice.
I'm playing on PC, and I'm really enjoying it. The game is beautiful, obviously, and I've long been of the opinion that Final Fantasy 13 is underappreciated, and my current playthrough just makes me feel that more strongly, truly. I think it's a great game.
I think it's a good game.
Slaggy, what about you? What have you been playing?
Well, after having some busy things related to my day job, I finally had the time to jump back into Final Fantasy 14, so chipping away at finishing off the main story quests for the original expansion, because I'm really eager to get into that Heavensward expansion material. Content. In addition, I've also been playing Final Fantasy Triple Triad on the Final Fantasy Portal, so I've just really, it's been very Final Fantasy for me. I also noticed that the Final Fantasy Portal was offering a free download of the iOS Final Fantasy 1 port, so I was like, okay, why not? It's free. And I tried it, and I couldn't with the touch controls. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm just like, my fingers are too fat or something, but like, you know, I did not find them very user-friendly. It did make me want to go and pick up one of the, you know, various ports that game has received and give it a playthrough.
Well, you have a Vita, right?
I do have a Vita, yeah.
Yeah, you could pick up the PS1 port off the PS Classics.
Yes, I could.
And that is, you know, it's pretty good, and it doesn't have the loading problems that some of the later PS1 ports of Final Fantasy have, so I'd recommend it.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, you know, I've been in the mood for a old school RPG, so why not go with the oldest school?
Or you could wait, you know, in Japan, the pre-orders for Final Fantasy Explorers came with a 3DS version of that port.
Ooh.
So who knows? Maybe we'll get that here in North America as well. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Anything else you've been playing?
Nope. But we do have some other social links.
Excellent. This is the time for it.
All right. So hopping back over to our Twitter, a couple of tweets to get caught up on. Last time we had talked about Your Enzyme and the Book Pirate. We're talking about Quantum Break and Alan Wake. Your Enzyme had continued saying, I played a little bit of Alan Wake, never beat it though, which is my experience too. Gamer Fox had said, my workout companion for tonight, GameBuoy.org, and that was episode 88. So we're glad that we inspired you to pump up the jams and sweat and shake it off. Or something like that. And Gamer Fox also saying, I expect to see Super Mario Maker levels from all of you. And then, you know, tagged all the Hunty Bunch podcasts. And yeah, we will definitely be doing that. Like, most def. So we can't wait until Mario Maker is out. Sorry, Super Mario Maker.
I have legit been, like, at work on my breaks, like, with graph paper, like, making stage layouts. So
and
I think
this
is going to be fun.
Like,
I think it's going to be fun.
Like, dozens and dozens now of confirmed costume mushroom Marios, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's exciting.
There's going to be one for every amiibo and more.
Yeah, which is super, super exciting. We also got a tweet from Your Enzyme saying, are you two going to be attending the PlayStation Experience in December? And as Captain Spike had announced, you know, we're kind of on the fence about that. But Your Enzyme saying, if it's on your birthday, then do something else. Also didn't realize they were doing a GX this year. Yep. GX is in its third year. We're very excited for that. So, yeah, we'll definitely let you know, though. But also, if you are either local and planning on going, or you want to be our Game Buoy correspondent, if you're coming from out of town for that, you know, first of all, definitely let us know if you're coming from out of town, because we are Bay Area locals. We would like to say hi to you. But also, you know, if you want to be our official Game Buoy representative, let us know if we don't end up getting to that. Amiru69 had tweeted and said, what is the name of the 2D fighting game with anime characters that's finally coming to the West soon? And that would be Dengeki Bunko Fighting Climax. And he had also asked, do you know if the PS3 version is identical to the Vita version? I had tweeted back, I believe so. But yeah, so you're confirming that yes.
Very slight graphical differences that you would expect between the two consoles, otherwise the same.
Excellent. So we're so glad that you thought to ask us.
Yeah.
And we love your feedback.
We love your feedback.
We like your iTunes ratings and reviews. And
we like them.
Oh, wait. We have another tweet that I honestly did forget to read. I wasn't ignoring this one on purpose. Because back on August 14th, your Enzyme had tweeted in response to our episode getting up a little delayed for the last episode, saying, come on, Slaggy, I need my fix. I even downloaded Stitcher thinking it was an iTunes problem again.
Yes.
Hopefully you're enjoying
read
Stitcher.
Her.
So hopefully you're enjoying Stitcher. It's my new preferred way to listen to great podcasts.
I legit had that episode done editing the night we recorded it.
You did. I had some day job things that unfortunately I had to take priority.
Oh, and girl, I don't blame you. I would never ask you to you know, devote energies from your day job. But I have to tease you a little because I was ready to go.
Except I'm reading Silicon Era at my desk every day for this show. No, just kidding.
I do. I mean, I eat short lunches so that I can devote time to the show.
You do. But that said, we love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. And, you know, we're still working on getting to the bottom of any tech issues that iTunes is having. Please continue to let us know if things are working hunky-dory or chunky and poorly. We like your Facebook likes.
We
very
like
much.
The likes.
And we effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
So you can tweet us at any time. Our Twitter is at GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out .dotorg.
At GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out .dotorg.
And you can tweet us or Facebook us at any time. Not even if it's about a question of the week. You can just say hi, share your thoughts, tell us what you're playing. Or if you're a backlog Betty or Brian, you can, you know, tune in. You can let us know what you thought of a past episode. You can also do the same thing at our email, which is mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
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 Stop. That's not a thing anymore.
It's not? Did you kill the pirate Pip-Flop?
No, we just haven't been doing it for like five. Just keep going.
Of course, you can find everything over at our home base, which is GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
So please check that out for our entire episode archives. And in most cases, show notes, except the times where it's under construction.gif, but that will not be the case this week. And
woohoo!
With that, I believe it's time to do some shout outs. And I'm doing the new one, so
I was going to let you.
Okay, thank you.
As ever and always, my first shout-out goes to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as the Game Over Takeover. Oh, no, that's not even my shout-out anymore. It's just so ingrained in my brain. As well as Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I've stolen ever so many of my cues.
I'd be remiss, royalties.
Not to mention the Nintendo Fun Club podcast, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as their sister show, Enos Lives, looking at one PlayStation 1 classic at a time.
That's a great show.
It is such a good show. You should also take a look at Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin and is absolutely worth your time.
Possibly the only show that loves Nintendo more than us.
As well as their sister show, X Nation, which you can find over at culturalwormhole.blogspot.com. Although it's not a video game podcast, it is an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. We also have Slaggy's currently on hiatus show, Reading is Fundamental, in which we all dish about RuPaul's Drag Race. We all being Slaggy, myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness. Slaggy, you need to get on bringing that show back for something. We specifically said we weren't going to go on full hiatus, and yet that's where we are. Get on it, girl.
Maybe I'll just leave it to you to take control, like Michelle Visage, Battle of the Seasons.
Oh, hell. And last but never, ever, ever least, the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail.
And laster, but even not leaster,
Tables, Ladders, and Podcasts. Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, take us somewhere.
I'm going to take you to the gay video game Prairie Home Companion, known as Game Bar. They are a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with Koopa Club, an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. The award is from their mothers, and they just recently switched over to a seasonal format, which is a super cool take on the, you know, kind of like that. What's that new, like, Serial, that one podcast?
Yeah, it's Serial.
They're like, they could be called the Nintendo Serial.
Oh my god, Nintendo
Cereal for breakfast. I'd like to also shout out to the Game Over Takeover podcast, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore. They are currently on a little hiatus, but, you know, definitely, I was just chatting with Wicked, a.k.a. John. And, you know, it's not gone forever, just, you know, needs to take a short little break while its hosts are, you know, taking care of real life stuff. We know what that's like. But I'd also like... I'd like to also...
Nickelodeon.
I'd like to also shout out to the newest edition of the Hunty Bunch, which is Joystick Jockeys, starring two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, you can hear lots of great shows. That's VogNetwork.com. Orange Lounge Radio is one of them. And Girls Gone Wow is another, where you can get a female perspective on the world's first most popular MMO, but maybe not so much anymore.
I don't know. You know, Final Fantasy announced this week they're up to 5 million subscribers. Well, so that is accounts, not active subscribers, but they come in for you, Blizzard.
Yeah, so maybe I'll say where you can get a female's perspective on what's going on in Azeroth. And for a show that started out about what's going on in Azeroth, but turned into the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously, check out the wonderful archive of episodes of Horde House. And kind of in limbo, from what I understand, I'm not sharing any gossip or anything. I don't know what the plans are, but sounds like some things are under construction. GIF over there. We wish those fellows the best.
I'm finally super, super, super into Final Fantasy 14, and y'all aren't on air anymore.
Right?
What is that?
Saying is that Rob, Grandpa, Exifer, if you are listening, which you better be, then if indeed Horde House, you know, does end up closing its doors and transforming into something else, please have a finale episode and invite us on.
Yeah, seriously.
We like to hear ourselves talk.
I know we have a lot of buoys under our belt right now, Slaggy, but I'm just saying if they don't get on their ball, it's time for online buoy.
Game buoy kind of can be online buoy.
Bitch, shut up.
Excuse me. You shut up so I can talk about La Palaca Podcast. Podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. And we have recently launched a new ship in the podcast pirate fleet. And that is the SS Anime Buoy.
Yeah, I know it doesn't sound quite as catchy, but, you know, slag kick. Rob Roberts once described Game Buoy as being something he appreciated because we were buoying up news that might otherwise be missed. For Anime Buoy, we're taking a very similar tack. You know, I've noticed a lot of people talking about how they want to get into anime, but they don't, like, know where to get into it. Or people talking about, like, you know, I've seen all the big shows, but I all the time am hearing about, like, these shows I've never heard about that I don't know what are. Where do I hop in? What we are trying to do with Anime Buoy is buoy up those series. We want to sort of help you find cool off-the-radar stuff that maybe you've never heard of but most definitely should be watching. Yep. And, you know, just sort of treat you to sort of our take on an anime 101, get you into cool stuff, talk about some old classics that don't deserve to be forgotten, and, you know, just keep nerding out with you guys because we love our fans, we love talking to you all, and by all means, you know, it appears that y'all tolerate us, so we appreciate that.
And that's Anime Buoy, your twice monthly port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be, over at, you guessed it, animebuoy.org.
Animebuoy.org.
Man, I don't think I'm qualified for it, but I think you should get on a comics buoy, and then we can have the whole triple triad of buoys.
Well, I don't know. If we were to do another buoy, it'd either be comics or music. Buoy.
Enough speculation. We also, well, speaking of music, though, we do want to thank Zelda Reorchestrated.
Thanks for catching that.
We do want to thank them for being responsible for our beautiful theme music, which, you know, is one of their many reorchestrated Zelda songs that they did. And, you know, that was kind of their goal. Unfortunately, they closed their doors. They're no longer doing that, but we'll forever be pouring out a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain. I think the Great Fairy either is going to be getting really tipsy or kind of pissed at us. Maybe she'll just upgrade our sword.
All right. Well, with all of that having been said, Slaggy, do you have anything else?
Virtual Boy, happy birthday.
All right.
And kind of like happy anniversary of your death, too.
Oh, unkind.
Also, I just want to say that, you know, maybe this is what you were going to say, but please stay tuned to our Ninty 90s. We've got some big themes planned over the next couple episodes as we finish up the double digits. OMG.
OMG. But until next time, thank you so much for spending this lovely Sunday afternoon with us. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening as much as we've enjoyed talking. We did not talk about the fact that there's a Bayonetta patchy slot game coming.
Oh
but
God,
there
I'm
is.
So. Patchy slot just really... we've had too much of that. Patchy slot buoy. There's our third one.
So keep gaming, keep thinking, and see you, Space Cowboy.
Hey, isn't there something big happening in gaming next month? Nah.
We'll see.
The game will be running on the Yawakara. The game will be running on the Yara. The game will be running on the Yawaraka engine. Shane Alenko says I actually own one and think it kind of gets my.
Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast. Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast. Testing. Speak in your mic. That's super racist. Give me something else.
Sorry, you can't use any of this, please.
I'm going to use all of it.
No, we also got words that The Legend of Heroes Trails in the Sky SC Evolution is on its way to Vita. This is similar to The Legend of Heroes Trails in the Sky Evolution for PS4. Like, I don't remember what regular... Is SC the sequel? Like, I don't remember these. I'm just going to do this over, okay? So with that...
I'm actually going to remove that.
Yes.
Going on, I don't think that's an appropriate joke.
See, there's actually a lot of dedicated fans.
No, I'm just going to leave it with a lot of Virtual Boy lovers. And people who want to cackle about that at home can do so. Ah, you nasty bitch.